Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the nation's second longest running comic convention. It's Ithacon, April 22nd and 23rd at Emerson Suites on the Ithaca College campus. Tickets just $20, free for kids. Order tickets at ithacon.org. See DC Comic Vets Mike Gold, Jamal Igel, Tom Pyre, Megaton Man's Don Simpson, J.C. Vaughn from the Overstreet Price Guide. The featured publisher Ahoy Comics will have a full crew of creators ready to serve. Ithacon 46 celebrates the 30th anniversary of DC's landmark Death of Superman event with the writer Roger Stern and colorist Glenn Whitmore. There'll be cosplay contests, panels, kids' activities, and more. Plus, Ithacon is offering swag bags for the first 250 attendees to buy tickets. These overstuffed swag bags offer over $20 to $50 value in comics, books, and more. Join us for Ithacon, April 22nd and 23rd at Emerson Suites on the Ithaca College campus. Tickets just $20. Order tickets now at ithacon.org. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Word Balloon. This is John Suntress. With an important plea for 2023, you probably read the headlines. Word Balloon took a sponsorship hit that was pretty significant. And I'm asking you if you've ever been a fan of Word Balloon and considered making a donation through Patreon, a very meager but important subscription. I hope you'll consider it. It's going to be a challenging 2023, and I need your help. So if you like Word Balloon, if you enjoy the content, I'm not going to slow down and keep bringing you some excellent content, but I could really use your help via Patreon, patreon.com/wordballoon. If you can afford the price of a comic book, if you can even afford $1 a month, it would be greatly appreciated and help the cause to keep Word Balloon going at the level and intensity that I've been doing in the last 4 or 5 years and bring you a lot more content. And a lot of great interviews and interesting things about the pop culture world. Patreon.com/WordBalloon. I could really use your help. Thank you for your attention, your time, and listening to Word Balloon. Word Balloon is brought to you by AlexRossArt.com. Alex has been a longtime sponsor of Word Balloon. I greatly appreciate it. You got to go to his website. You will find tremendous art from original work, covers, pages, fantastic lithographs, amazing posters. Every price point is covered and every subject is covered at AlexRossArt.com. You've enjoyed his iconic looks at DC and Marvel, but also great stuff like his wonderful work on the Monkees, Monty Python, so many other great pop culture things that Alex has put his fingerprints on. His wonderful Flash Gordon poster that evokes the fantastic Dino De Laurentiis, Sam Jones movie. Recently, Alex did things like the timeless Marvel covers featuring great solo shots of all your favorite Marvel heroes, and of course his Fantastic Four full circle graphic novel still available. All waiting for you now at AlexRossArt.com. Welcome back, everybody. It's time again for Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. Rom V joins us. Rom, good to see you, man.
Good to be back.
Last time we talked, it was before your Detective Comics run began. And now we're mid-story, and next week is Detective 1070, I believe.
Yep, that's right. And,
dude, congratulations. I know it's only mid-story, but, God, it's been 11 years since the Court of Owls, which took us to the 1800s of Gotham, and now your story is taking us another 100 years or so, 150 years further in the past to colonial times. This is great.
Yeah. No, it's been – well, thank you. Thank you for the kind words. And it's been a blast writing it, just getting to – kind of add to the history of it and you know, when I first, I was linked to an old video of my own on TikTok the other day, like someone had recorded one of my interviews and put it up on TikTok. And in it, I talk about pitching this book at the very beginning, going to my editor, Jessica Chen, and saying, hey, I want to do something that, you know, kind of lets me leave some long-term consequences for some of these characters and put my mark on things in an interesting way. And yeah, it's kind of cool to be able to be almost most of the way through act one, starting act two and going like, okay, yeah, I know where this goes. By the time we hit act four, I guess, by the time we hit that climax, Yeah, it's gonna be some significant twists and turns and changes. Yeah.
Well, I mean, already you're I think giving us layers of existing relationships, but also at the same time presenting this new old threat to Gotham. And you know, if I may, because of course, and you know, Rob, every time I talk to somebody about your work, I always bring up my favorite creator-owned thing you did, which is the Savage Shores.
Yeah, thank you.
And the idea, and certainly colonialism is of a different kind in that story. But yeah, just the idea of colonialism in general, is that, I mean, do you do a lot of research on that? Is that a historic subject that does fascinate you in general?
To an extent. I guess my interest is bigger in that I like the swings and balances of power and history. And I'm always amused by how much history we forget in such a short space of time. And for all our great intelligence and philosophical investigations and evolutions, we seemed doomed to repeat ourselves over and over and over again. And if you think about it, you know, a comic where Batman has been saving Gotham over and over and over again seems like the perfect place to talk about that.
I don't blame you, man. That's great. Outstanding. God, I love what you're doing. I mean, all these relationships again. And it is hard to say something new about Batman. Yeah. And that's great because you're using the familiar, but you're giving us a different spin on it.
But isn't knowing that in itself is a new thing, right? Knowing that I can't say something new because it's all cyclical and it's probably all been done before. But that's new. Knowing that as a writer is new. And I don't think that has been explored enough. What is it like for this guy to be claiming that he saves Gotham, and yet for, you know, however many decades he's been doing it, Gotham seems to never change. What does that say about the efficacy of Batman? You know,
I love it. Honestly, yes, man. And the meta message of we've seen this before. And that's really you're right. But, man.
And also, like in a larger picture, we're then talking about stories. Why do stories repeat themselves? Why are they cyclical? Why are they concerned with the same things?
Well, human nature, though. I mean, that's the thing. Again, our frailties lead us to unfortunately the same consequences and conclusions. So
This was something I was talking about with another writer friend, where I said, if anything, so before I was a writer, I was a chemical engineer, I traveled the world, et cetera, et cetera. And if anything I learned from my travels, it is that the multitudes of differences in humanity cannot ever stand in the way of the fact that human beings across the world care and worry and are afraid and are concerned about the same things. Even if they come from diametrically opposite corners of the world, essentially, fundamentally, they care about similar things. Maybe they express them differently. And so knowing that is wonderful for a storyteller.
I like it, man. Wesley Jones can't stick around, but he just want to let you know that he's loving everything you're doing right now. So well
Thank
done.
Thank you, Wesley. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, I want to talk about some of these layers of the relationship and stuff. I love the way you're portraying Jim Gordon. I like older Jim Gordon. I had no problem during Scott Snyder's run where, if you want to say it was a little earlier in his career and there's redheaded Jim Gordon and stuff. And I kind of like, and maybe as I'm getting older, I like Jim Gordon being older, but also very capable. And I love his moments so far in the story of literally saving Batman at one point as well. And, literally pulling him out of the drink. That was great.
Yeah. I mean, it's also really interesting, right? So as a purely from the craft perspective, it's weird to have Batman going through Gotham and not have a voice in his ear. It used to be Alfred. It used to be, hey, can I talk to, who do I talk to? Who do I have a conversation with while I'm flying over the dark alleys of Gotham? And I felt like, okay, I'm not a big fan of like retconning things. And I really, really like Alfred as a character.
Me too.
But I think it's super important to be like, okay, well, that happened in comics. And so how do we deal with that? That's super interesting to me. And so I said, okay, I'm going to have Gordon come back and step into that space that Alfred used to occupy. But then that kind of opened up all these incredible possibilities because Gordon didn't raise Batman. He doesn't know. I mean, he knows, but he doesn't know it's Bruce Wayne.
Sure.
So Gordon's view of this character is now based entirely upon their decades-long friendship. But his view of it is predicated upon the idea that he believes somewhere deep down there is a human being there. And he knows it, but he doesn't know it for sure. Whereas Alfred's entire perspective was almost the opposite of that. He knew the human being and he knew that the rest of the world believes in the myth, but he always knew the human being underneath. And I think that sort of relationship of caring and concern, but coming from opposite ends of the spectrum is super interesting for me to write, especially in reflection of the fact that, people responded to it so well and they were like, oh man, this is like having Alfred back. And I was like, yes, it is, but it's not.
Exactly. No, absolutely. And you'll forgive the comparisons. They're both favorable, but there's echoes of No Man's Land and even Dark Knight Returns in terms of having a civilian Gordon.
Yeah.
Unlike in Dark Knight Returns, more so No Man's Land, respecting the space.
Yeah.
And I really love, something? Shame on me. Because DC has given me access to 1070, and I might be remembering a scene that's coming up next week, so I'm not even going to say it. But there's a couple good chats between Jim and Bruce.
Again, one's already out.
Okay, that was 1068 or 69.
That was fantastic.
The last issue. That was so great, man, where literally in that classic moment of, I don't even know if he's still listening to me, where it would be normally in a rooftop, but they're both in a room. They're separated by a wall. Again, Jim respecting the space.
Yeah.
But both of them.
Yeah, it was such a great flip to play. Like when I first thought of the idea, I was like, oh my God, this is so classic because this is a moment you've seen across comics, across film, across animation. And to take that moment and kind of flip it on its head, go like, nope, this time he's listening.
Dude, I'm telling you, I again, you'll forgive if I don't mean to blow smoke up your ass, but I think this is going to be one of those stories that definitely is going to be an evergreen. And you're giving us really classic, interesting moments. While we're on the subject of Jim and Bruce, being a civilian now, Chatham wants to know, is that dangerous for Batman and Jim?
Yeah, to an extent, yes, of course it is. And that is why Jim is so hesitant, but also, speaking on the subject of addictions, as we broached last time, I think Jim is also addicted to being in this dangerous position.
Oh yeah.
It really is if you think about it, it's that classic story of like two aging characters wanting to better things for themselves and each other, but unable to get out of the patterns that they've found themselves in over the years.
They both committed themselves to protecting or saving Gotham on different terms.
Yes.
And obviously Jim did that when he came to Gotham and as a young cop, Bruce obviously since his parents died. Yeah. No, I think that's great. All right, Chatham wants to know, and I'll throw the question up there, and I'm interested to see how you're going to answer this. But do you think the current status quo for Jim will remain, or will he return to his badge again?
I mean, not in my run, because I love change. I hate returning things to where they started, unless you can justify well and truly why things went back. Like returning Two-Face to his original status quo in the run as well. But, you know, we earned that over whatever, 5-6 issues. And hopefully, you know, people thought it was well-earned as well. So, I love change and I love consequences for characters. So,
finish if you got more to say about Jim.
I was just going to say generally I tend not to undo status quos in my runs. I like to move forward. I like to create new status quos for characters. Yeah.
I think there's new story opportunity to let Jim be a civilian.
Yeah.
And still has that. I mean, and you can always tell a great flashback story that puts Jim back as commissioner. That's fine. But I really do think he is more valuable to Bruce as you say, not only.
But he's also a PI now. He's working with public.
Right.
And so I think there is a whole slew of new stories to be told with aging PI James Gordon, you know?
I so agree. And that, again, it's why I've loved how you've handled him in this story, in that he is very capable, despite no longer being the commissioner and stuff. This is a very, and that's why.
This is a guy who knows exactly how both sides of the fence that he is now straddling. He knows exactly how both sides function. And so he's probably more dangerous than he was constrained by a commissioner's chair, you know?
You're pulling on a lot of strings here, and I want to acknowledge Olintho Carmargo, pardon me. Loving Detective Comics, I miss reading long runs with an ever-evolving plot and continuing stories. We see Lian in the latest issue. Any chance we'll see her alongside her mother again?
Yeah, all I can say is keep reading.
Absolutely.
You know, That's a plot line I began in Catwoman, Leanne and Jade.
Oh, pardon me, Leanne, of course.
Yeah. It's a plot line that I continue to evolve. I love picking up threads from old runs. You know, one of my earliest memories of enjoying a piece of work and then having it blow my mind was reading Stephen King and realizing that all of his other works tied into the Gunslinger in some ways, and they were all part of the Dark Tower. It completely blew my mind that you could do that across a body of work. And so, you know, there have been pieces I've been picking up from Catwoman. There will be pieces I'm picking up from maybe my JLD run. There'll be pieces I'm picking up from Dan Waters' Arkham City, Order of the World. And maybe even from Azrael there's the beauty of working in comics is there's never a shortage of threads to pull on. So
that's awesome. That's funny. You just answered Nachlik Nake's question regarding that we might see some more Justice League Dark elements. And
yeah. Also, right. In Justice League Dark, I pulled on an authority character in the form of Jack Hawksmoor. And then, so if there was ever a question of a character who interacts with a city, I think the opportunity, I don't know, it's probably been done before. I haven't researched it enough, but Hawksmoor's probably been in Gotham before. Still, that is a fascinating route to take. But also, I'm a big fan of the Rick Veitch take on the question with the psychopomp city communicating question. And to have that relationship with Gotham might be an interesting thing as well. So there's a lot of directions I could go in. I'm a pretty fluid writer. I tend not to make grand plans before I get to the moment where I need to make them. Like I know the bigger shape of things, but these details, I kind of go with the flow because, you know, sometimes editorial changes dictate you can use something versus you can't use something, or sometimes sure. You have to use something. And it's good to be fluid on those things. But yeah, these are all.
Sorry, go ahead. I was going to ask, has that happened to you in previous runs or even in this run? As far as having
plenty of times. There are things being set up in Detective for Chip's Batman run, which are not apparent right away, but they will become apparent when we get there. The Suicide Squad and Swamp Thing was an editorial inclusion. And you know, a lot of people think that's a complaint. A lot of people think that that's a negative, but no, I'm like, no, tell me what you want me to do, but let me do it the way I want to do it. I will take on whatever wall you want to put in front of me. I will scale it, but whether I climb or I use a jetpack is up to me. So, that was genuinely the case with Suicide Squad, where they were like, oh, can we put Suicide Squad on Swamp Thing? I said, yeah, bring it on. But I get to pick who comes in to represent the squad. And it turned out to be such a pivotal and important part of the Swamp Thing run. So
that's great, man. No, and again, well done as far as season two. And we're all waiting for season three. I hope you and Mike when you come back with season three, would Perkins be with you, or would it be a different artist?
Well, I mean, I would say it's the other way around. Like, I know Mike and I are going to collaborate again. Whether it's on season three or something else first is a different question. I kind of like the idea of stories being contained, finite things that have something to say, and they say them. So with Swamp Thing, certainly, like, I would love to come back to that character, but when I feel like I have a story to tell that is significantly different and engaging, like the previous one was. So, you know, in time. But also, there are other stories that I would love to tell with Mike over at DC. And, you know, we've had these conversations. I'm talking to editors, so you might see us on something else entirely.
That's great. Is Mike back in the UK, isn't he?
Yes. He moved to the UK recently, I think last year.
In the last year or two, absolutely.
And I hung out with him plenty of times. I'll be seeing him again next month. So,
yeah. Oh, that's great. I miss him already.
He's a lovely, lovely gentleman.
Absolutely, man. No, we've hung many times, and he's really one of the first pros that I really got to know.
Oh, right. Comics,
you know, 18 years ago and everything. Absolutely, man. So there you go. And Mike Jones likes the analogies that we're discussing. I appreciate that. I agree, man. Harvey and Bruce, and I is this finally, or had Harvey previously acknowledged that he knew Batman was Bruce Wayne?
So as far as my understanding of it goes, in a prior Detective Comics run, I think it was Tomasi's run, Harvey knew who Batman was. Harvey knew Batman's identity, but he had this kind of internal mental wall by which Two-Face didn't know it was Batman.
Okay.
And we kind of exploited that in an interesting way here, to where now Two-Face knows it's Bruce. And that will have a telling effect in the way things pan out later on.
That's great, man. And again, you know, it's the regrets in Batman's life that I think are the most interesting.
Yeah.
And in a different way, Jason is a great regret, the way things turn out with him. But the whole Harvey thing, which I love from when Frank Miller and did Year One with Mazzucchelli and everything.
Yeah.
It really was the three of them, or really the really Harvey and Batman working together. But also you could throw Jim in there as well.
Yeah.
And so I really like this idea that it makes Two-Face that much more dangerous, or depending on the flip of a coin, as we've seen, a useful ally at the right moment as well.
And absolutely.
That's great.
but also now that Harvey blames himself for this conundrum, will he finally supersede Two-Face to save his friend? And that's an interesting question to ask. Can you overcome your own belligerent persona to save your friend, because you would blame yourself if you didn't? And so that's an interesting question to ask. I think that plays on a lot of their, both of their relationships are built on regret in a lot of ways. And then, you know, a lot of people talk about how, like, oh, it's not a big threat from Two-Face to say, I'll go after people you care about. But you forget, like, the Batman in Detective is a person who has relationships outside of being Batman. It's not like everyone he knows is a superhero, which is kind of how things have panned out in the sort of larger mainstream universe, which is the nature of these things, because, you know, there's only so much difference between a soap opera and a mythology. So, but the way I like to deal with these characters is they have lives outside of being superheroes, and they have difficult lives outside of being superheroes. And when those two things cross over and collide, there should be terrible, terrible consequences, because, and I might be taking a page out of other people's book when I say this, no person should, in my opinion, should read a superhero book and go, it's definitely better to be a superhero than be a human being. Like, yes, it's great power and adventure and all of that, but in the end, the message has always been, I mean, and I take the sort of quintessential superhero when I say this, but I take Superman as an example. Superman's greatest power is that he desires more than anyone else to be like us. And that is his greatest power. And you should always leave a comic feeling that way.
Well, and also the heroes are, if this is a lofty description, they're the servants of the people. And so they are taking the lumps so that the everyday people don't have to do that.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying. Absolutely. And also, to me, the strongest characters as far as superheroes go are the ones that have that Greek chorus of average people that still are important in their lives and are there to be human beings in their moments. My great examples, like Bruce and Alfred, are Matt Murdock and Foggy Nelson.
Yes, absolutely.
Foggy's the guy that can go to Matt Murdock and go, hey, you're fucking up.
Yeah.
And not do it like, hey, you're fucking up. It's like, no, this is your friend, man.
But you know what that is? It's the classic Greek tragedy. It's the memento mori. It's the you are mortal and you are answerable to powers higher than yourselves. So Matt Murdock is answerable to Foggy, and Bruce has always been answerable to Alfred.
You know, I rarely pat my heritage on the back, but you know, the Greeks really did have something going.
When
they did this stuff. So yeah, that's awesome, man. Mathis B, I love how much regret Superman has in All-Star Superman. He really can't get closure with Lois and his friends in the end. Of course not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a very important part of being that character. The moment you take that away, it becomes ossified. It becomes an object. It becomes things that a thing that is foreign to you. Superman becomes the alien the moment you take his desire to be human away.
I agree with all of that. Absolutely, man. Chatham says, how about a story regarding Swamp Thing with Trinity? Something you would like to do more about her or the King of Cities?
One day, like I said, you know, these things, like, I created Trinity, I think in the latter half of that run, less than half, maybe latter third of that run. And I think it's good to leave characters to marinate for a while. I think it'd be nice to go back and pick up a storyline that in my head goes like, oh, wait, I can involve Trinity here. So, yeah, I like the character. I like the message of what she stood for. which a lot of people, you know, have their own theories of what the character stood for. But at the risk of giving away too much about my work, I created Trinity as a as an avatar that was truly, innocently man-made. You know, Trinity, the character comes from trinitite, which is a material that is formed when there's a nuclear explosion. It's a naturally formed material as a consequence of an unnatural act. And so I think, to me, making with an agenda may be the downfall of humanity, but creating with innocence is the saving grace of humanity. And so Trinity kind of is a metaphor for that. All that will save us, our creativity, but tempered with our innocence, will save us.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Dynamite's Nick Barucci joining us. Man, Nick, doesn't matter what time of day I'm on, you're watching. I appreciate that. Rom continues to kill it. So great for the fans, the retailers, and the industry. So you don't have to thank me.
Thank you, Nick.
Very good. Yeah, man. No. It's you know, again, I've been hip to Rom's talent for a couple of years now, and I'm always happy when he comes back. Nerdette says hello and says we need more Trinity, such an amazing series, one of the best books in years.
Thank you, Nerdette.
Absolutely, man. How about Bruce and Talia? I'm always have. I like that Talia obviously is a bigger threat now. And also, hey, man, shame on you for killing Uhuru.
Wow. So Ubu's whole shtick is that. Yeah. Ubu's whole shtick is that he's immortal because there's always someone else who will take his place. So technically, I'm the only one who has confessed to killing Ubu. Who knows how many Ubus have been killed before?
That's fantastic. You're right. Well, he's always one Lazarus pool away from coming back as well.
Yeah.
But no, I really – and again, it just made the threat bigger that even Uhuru is like torn to shreds and everything. It's like, okay, I like it. That's fantastic, man.
Bruce and Talia has been a super interesting equation to write. Obviously, I wrote Catwoman before, and I had written the Bruce and Selina romance there. And Bruce and Talia's relationship to me is entirely different, entirely much more complicated in that sense. And it's a super interesting space to explore while Bruce is kind of aging and is full of regrets in some ways. And at that moment, to have a person show up who understands what it is to be in that position, to care for someone, but only have regrets where they are concerned. So I think Talia is a great sort of mirror and reflection for that. And it's been interesting. She plays a very important role later in the run as well. I think it's gonna be a cool journey to write.
And because I'm sure I'm reading it and pronouncing it in my head wrong. Give us the prince's name and also his people.
So it's Arzen Orgum is the prince. His mother is Queen Daria Orgum. And his three sort of doyens are Niang Modrum, who is of Indian origin. Gael Tenclaw, who is one of the original Timur's invading hordes, if you will, and Shavad Erhad, who is Persian in origin, and their masks all have names as well. So Gael's mask is called the Ten Claw, Niang's mask is called the Dark Blood, and Shavad's mask is called the Eye of the Serpent. So, yeah.
All the masks, all the analogies that come with them, Two-Face mask, Bruce's mask as well, but also introducing these new threats and this whole, group of new villains. And again, not only representing historical threats, but also interesting international threats as well.
Yeah. I felt like part of my endeavor, you know, good to go back to what we started with, which is the whole colonialism topic. But part of my endeavor was to say, okay, we can take characters who are not, you know, European or American in origin, bring them in and treat them with nuance and complexity. But that doesn't necessarily mean I have to make them, you know, the good guys every time. Like, we can still have them be villains, but even as villains, they can be fully developed characters, complex. They have their own reasons for their loyalty to the Orgums, and some of them have been with the Orgums for longer than the others. So, in fact, one of my inspirations for this was the Mughal Emperor Babur, when he was Emperor of India, or the region that is India at the time. His court was one of the most inclusive courts there has ever been in existence. His ministers were Indian, Mongolian, Chinese, European, Arabian. Wow. He had people from all over the world advising him. And I thought that was such a fascinating way. And this is the part of history that always blows my mind. You know, we talk about things like identity and borders and you know, immigration, blah, 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 blah. People don't realize that the world actually was a lot closer, you know, centuries ago than it is now. You know, people talk about, oh my God, you know, people from India are immigrating all over the place. Do you know in 1760s in India, the port of Calicut, which is in the Savage Shores, had a French quarter, had a Portuguese quarter, had Arabian traders bringing in coffee, had British ships arriving. And so can you imagine that port in 1760s? It must have been such a fascinating place. And here we are now in 2023 complaining about, like, oh, my God, I don't like these people coming here. it's like you're crawling backwards. You know,
sadly, hell, man, all you got to do is think about the last 55 years, most of my life. And I can point to that. I thought we were going in the right direction. All of a sudden, you know, it's a bad board game. Jump back.
Yeah. People don't understand how much, like, I was going to go completely off tangent here. But I was on a train in the UK and there's a very sort of European, very white family in the train, and they're talking, and I can't quite sort of place their language, and I'm pretty good at recognizing European languages and stuff. And we're talking, I was there with my wife and kid, and we were talking in Tamil and Hindi and whatnot. And the guy from that family, the father in that family, turns over and he says, "Are you from India?" And I go, Yeah. He goes, like, "Do you know, my people are Romani people. We moved to Europe. You know, we migrated to Europe. And part of those migrations came through India. So our languages have a lot in common. And I ended up realizing the reason I was so fascinated by that guy's language was because he was using words that are straight out of Hindi, but he was born and brought up in Italy and had never been outside of Europe. So,
wow. That's great, man. Well, and again, and we've discussed this before, and again, I always use The Seven Shores as one of the examples. Foreign intrigue is a great genre.
Yeah.
And now we have the opportunity, and truly, obviously, us here in the States and likely in the, and definitely in the UK as well, it's always been from that Western European and an American perspective. Yeah. Well, now the opportunities to tell these stories a bit more broader. Yeah. And acknowledge the fact that the people from other lands and of other colors are,
you know, have their own lives and, yes, and cultures and histories. Yeah.
Right. And can be brilliant, you know, people as well. And not just the natives that are being, you know, saved by the white lord and everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's great. That is great. Because really it's always been more the general trappings of foreign intrigue that have interested me. And I'm so glad that people like yourself and other writers are recognizing the opportunity to still explore that and with a clearer vision.
I think like that's one of the great things about stories, right? Like stories build bridges without whether you know it or not. You know, I've never been to lots of places. I've never been to Russia, for example, but I read Russian science fiction a lot. And so there is a cultural bridge in some ways about knowing the baggage that Russia as a culture carries through their stories. And the same is true of Japanese writers in Japan. Like I was talking about this with someone else and I went like, do you realize that when you watch Japanese animation, when you watch a Japanese movie and you read a Japanese novel, they have this through line. They have this way of looking at reality and subjective reality and magic realism that is unique to them, at least from my point of view as an outsider. I feel like there is a through line to all of this. And surely that's not because all of these authors coordinated their work. It's because it's cultural.
Right.
And that's such a wonderful, beautiful thing to experience.
I completely agree. John Lehman and I were talking about this last night, and he's been telling me about his fascination with Korean soap operas, and I confided in him before she passed away. My 98-year-old aunt in her 90s got sucked into, you know, K-drama as well.
Sure.
And it was so adorable to see it. She's like, you know, these stories are really interesting. And I'm like, and just like you said, man, no, she was tapping into the cultural perspective. That's terrific. Absolutely, man. So I get it, and I'm glad that people like yourself are exploring that. And truly, both the history and mythology of people of different backgrounds and stuff is stuff that we've rarely seen in American comics. So we welcome the differences and the mysteries that they bring.
Yeah, and also the idea of, you know, cities and power and control varies from culture to culture. And so what Batman has been trying to do is save Gotham. And technically what Arzen's trying to do and the Orgums are trying to do is save Gotham as well. Like they don't see their work as a negative. And so that's an interesting and important question to investigate as well. Like, what is the underlying philosophy of Batman outside of the cultural assumption that to save something, you must save all of it? It's been brilliant to write.
It's outstanding, man. It's really, I think you're telling this epic story. And is that going to be it on Batman? Will you walk away when the story is done, or are there other stories to come? Again, I mean, we got plenty of story left to go in this run.
Yeah. No, I mean, but I think also necessarily I would have to, when it gets to a point where I feel like this is what I wanted to tell, I think necessarily I would need to step back from it just so it feels like, you know, I had an opportunity to tell something finite and contained in some ways.
You discuss your feelings about Superman as a character. I'm sure there are other DC heroes. And again, you've had a great opportunity with Justice League Dark and some of the other things you've written to be able to explore other DC characters. But is there another title or a couple titles that you've got, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even before, you know, I was on Detective, I went to my editors and I said, hey, like, these are the things that I'd be interested in. And Detective was one of them. So I definitely feel like I've got a Green Lantern story in me at some point. I already used the character in Swamp Thing as well. So I have a few of those. I'm trying not to give away the stuff that I've already pitched to editors. So, yeah.
Excellent, man. That's great. I also like the backups that are happening in Detective as well. And obviously, it's been Cy and Al Ewing, right? Cy Spurrier and Al Ewing writing the backups, or?
Oh, it's not Al. It's Cy on the backups.
Oh, it's only Cy.
It's just Cy.
My apologies. Sorry,
Cy. And I think only recently announced, I think Dan Waters is now taken over from Cy on the backups. Again, both writers that I've known for quite some time, and they're local to my sort of UK comic scene as well. So it's great to be able to coordinate with them. I think the backups, part of our endeavor with the backups was we didn't want to do two separate things in every issue. The backups, we wanted them to add to the experience of reading the story. And for those who've been paying attention, I think that's been great. Yeah.
That's great. And people are already acknowledging that they're happy to hear that Dan Waters is coming to the book.
That's great.
Jordy's been very complimentary to me during this chat. And thank you, Jordy. Jordy's a friend of Rob Burnett's. And thank you. You said nice things. But you're asking me how representation in comics of people of color have changed story arcs in the comics landscape. It's broadened it. It's that simple. I think we're getting new ideas and new thoughts and new perspectives. And how is that a bad thing? That's a great thing. Not that you're saying, Jordy, that it's a bad thing, but I, I've been reading this stuff for literally 50 years since I was 5 years old, you know, or eight, you know, wait a minute. I'm 58. So maybe 53 years, let's say that, but truly. And it's like, no, I still like superhero stories and I really like creator owned stories as well. And in both cases of DC and Marvel superhero stories, and then the non-superhero stuff that we get from creator-owned or other sources, this has been great. I've said this for the last 20 years. It's one of the reasons why I got re-energized again about comics after kind of taking a break in the 90s, you know, post-school when you don't have money, you know, you're eating ramen. Sure. And everything. Sure. Absolutely. So no, this has been terrific. And again, it excites me that it's happening not only in the creator owned realm, but that, you know, again, I think DC and Marvel's getting a great shot in the arm for the new from the new voices.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, you know, I've got a book coming out at DC called The Vigil, which introduces a team of Indian superheroes, but very much as part of the DCU. It's part of the We Are Legends imprint. And I think that was very early on when I was talking to editors at DC, that was part of my endeavor. I said, you know, I want to see this idea of the superhero literally belongs to the world. And I want to see characters from other cultures, other countries, other backgrounds, all present in this universe, which is how the real world is, you know, which is how, like, if you live in anywhere that's not a remote sort of suburban location, if you live in anywhere close to a metropolitan area, you're going to run into people who are not from where you are from, who didn't grow up the way you did. And that makes us better as human beings. That makes us more interesting, well-rounded as human beings. Like, historically, isolation has never, never helped any culture, any civilization thrive. If anything, civilizations die when they try to isolate themselves. So I think it's great that we're seeing it now in comics in general, but also in the superhero space. And, you know, long may it continue. And I think I always like to quote this line, you know, there's a very popular sort of I don't know, witticism that goes around writing circles where people say, like, there's only six real plots. All stories boil down to, like, six plots or something like that. And they're probably picking up from Vonnegut's shapes of, or eight different shapes of stories. Or something,
yeah, or
like that. Joseph Campbell, yeah.
Campbell, exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But the truth of it is, this is largely a thesis of people who have read mostly American and European canon. I challenge you to read Indian mythology, Japanese stories, Korean stories, and tell me that their plots fall neatly into one of your six. They don't. And the reason for that is because stories are cultural objects. It's like when you read stories by Japanese authors, you're learning how to think in a different language. You're learning how to think in a different culture. And all of a sudden, you start getting new stories. And so that's part of the reason why it's very important to have that sort of representation through characters, but also storytellers and stories of other cultures and backgrounds.
That's great, man. Nerdette wants to know if you could tell us more about the We Are Legends imprint.
Yeah, so the We Are Legends imprint is a set of, I think there are four titles in it. That's supposed to be stories focused with superhero protagonists that are of an Asian American or Asian heritage. I think Greg Pak's writing one, Alyssa Wong's writing one. Pardon me for not knowing who every creator on creator team is on the imprint. I'm writing The Vigil. To get into a little bit more personal detail of why The Vigil and why the way it's shaped, I've always had a pet peeve when people do superheroes from India. And this is you realize, like, Indians have their own cliches and problems. Everyone always does mythology as the Indian superhero. Because you know, religion and mythology is such an important part of the culture.
Sure.
But I kind of wanted to push away from that because I was like, look, we've had so many of these. It's always someone who was in a temple somewhere and got a power. And I kind of wanted to do, what's it like to be contemporary, modern day Indian? What's it like to be someone who travels the world but is also from India, who has seen abject poverty but also has lived in high rises, you know? And so The Vigil is part of that. They're very contemporary team. The book is kind of modern neo-espionage, sci-fi tech bordering, conspiracy theory obsessed narratives. So in terms of the space that it occupies, think of things like, Planetary, Doom Patrol, a lot of the Wildstorm Authority stuff. So that's kind of the direction I'm pushing in. But also they're Indian. And so India has its own obsessions and shares of conspiracy theories and sci-fi ideas. So
that's amazing. Ouroboros Snake is excited. You just answered his question in terms of, may we see some Wildstorm Planetary characters in The Vigil, and says cheers to another Indian. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the influence is clearly there. I think introducing a character from those books in the first arc would be too on the nose. So maybe in the future. But for now, I want these. It's a 6-issue arc, you know, and potentially more if it does well. But in those 6 issues, I want people to get to know who these characters are behind their masks and behind their superhero personas, who they really are. So
when does The Vigil start?
The Vigil comes out in May. Issue 1 comes out in May, and then 6 issues from there. So not too far off. Yeah.
That's great. Well, you expect me to bug you in a couple months?
Yes. And also they have a guest appearance in 1070, Detective Comics 1070. So they will be hanging around Gotham occasionally for the foreseeable future.
Oh, that's great. And what a great way to introduce these characters and everything.
Yeah,
Very cool.
Yeah.
There you go, everybody. All right. So pay attention to Detective to get an early glimpse at The Vigil that's coming in just a few weeks. That's great, man. And Venom, tell me about Venom. Now, are you alternating, or did your run end? Tell me, yeah. Tell me what is because I'm on Marvel Unlimited, so I'm a few months behind. I won't.
Deny. Right, right. I mean, I was writing both Venom and Carnage until very recently, but also, you know, things have changed in terms of work for me. When I started comics, I always wanted to do writing in every possible medium. And fortunately, some of my books are being adapted into other mediums, and I've been able to, you know, have a role in adapting them. But that also means, you know, there's a ton of work that goes on with those things. So I've had to step back from some of my books. So I've stepped back from Venom and Carnage, but I've left them in very capable hands. Venom is being written by Al, who is, of course, incredible and has been writing Eddie Brock's side of the story. And he will be picking up the narrative from and I've largely been writing Dylan's side of the story. And the same thing on Carnage. I've been writing Carnage, the symbiote as separate from Cletus Cassidy, its host. And that's gone to like interesting places. I had a blast writing that book. But I think, as far as I know, it's Alex Pacnadel taking on that book. And so, yeah, like both of them are incredible, incredible writers and creators. And so I will watch and read as a fan from here on.
All right. Fair enough, man. Because, yeah, I was reading Venom. I wasn't reading Carnage. I have to, you know, again, Rom, you'll forgive me, but a lot of times you can't help but follow characters.
I'll allow you to skip one of my books. It's fine.
But yeah, that's great. No, what you did with Eddie's kid and everything and how he was dealing with, you know, the Venom symbiote and the Venom world. That was a great story. That was terrific, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. God, you know, this is why I'm always happy that every now and then we do daytime for my side of the world.
Yeah.
Word balloons, because not only do I get to get writers and artists from other countries, but I also get viewers. And Nobin says, as a Bangladeshi regular comic reader, the vigil sounds interesting. Looking forward to it. Way to go, Rom. Thanks a lot for watching, Nobin. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I feel like this is the stuff I didn't have, right? When I was growing up, I was reading, you know, Asimov and Stephen King, and there were no characters called Rom or Nobin or anything other than, you know, John, Tom, Roger. And so it was a step for me. It was a bridge for me to cross to be able to go, okay, now I want to write stories with Indian characters and I know how to do that. But the thing that excites me is there will be a whole bunch of people watching and hopefully reading some of these books. You know, lots of people have read Layla Starr. Lots of people have read These Savage Shores, and there's going to be, you know, kids, teenagers somewhere reading that going, I can do this. I can write stories about me and where I am from. Yeah.
100%. No question, man. So mentioning your creator owned stuff and the fact that there is, you know, TV film interest, are you able to tell us more details or is that still, you know, a little early before you can, you know, throw it out?
I mean, I think it's a little bit early. I can say this, I'm working on an animated show. I'm working on adapting, one of my books as well. And I'm consulting on an adaptation of one of my other books. And I you know, wrote a significant portion of a video game that's likely to come out in a few years time. But I can't give specifics of any of these things because, you know, as they say in Hollywood, nothing is actually happening until the cameras are rolling. And even then, maybe it will come out.
You're right, man. Bendis did a pilot for Powers here in Chicago that was going to be, you know, run by FX and never saw the light of day. Instead, it went to Sony and we got the version that was made in Atlanta and everything. So, Nachiket, I hope I'm saying your name right. Indians are engineers, doctors, businessmen, members of today. Pardon me. Yeah, I'm assuming it's members of today. We shouldn't be stuck in the Oriental mythology narratives of yesterday. Absolutely, man.
I mean, technically, it could also be memers of today.
What are memers?
people who make memes on the internet.
Oh, memers. Yes. Old man. I didn't know there was a term for memers. That's
I don't either, but I'm assuming that, you know, that could be, we'll take it as memers as well.
Don't worry, man. Right now, monster.com has got jobs for memers. I have no doubt, man. That's fantastic.
Oh, God. And so, yes, I totally agree. And also, like, there are so many, like, you want to read about Indian mythology. There's way too many books already out there. So go read one of them. You want to read about Indian spies and people traversing the bleed between worlds, then you come read Vigil.
Attaboy, absolutely, man. Oh, that's hilarious. He did mean memers. Absolutely.
Okay, yes, he did.
That's outstanding, man. I didn't know that. That's so great. Jesus. And again, there's certainly a need for that, unfortunately, as we've seen in social media. And stuff. Our Burrow Snake wants to know, would a book like The Phantom Stranger, Spectre, or The Demon interest you?
Yes, all of those characters are incredibly interesting. I love them. I would love to write them. But also, I can only write so many books. So if the opportunity presents itself, like I said, you know, I like a lot of characters, but I don't decide what I'm going to write based off of whether I like a character. It's usually I'll decide what I want to write based off of whether I have an interesting story to tell.
That's the best way to handle it. Absolutely, man. I love and, in fact, see the differences of the Phantom Stranger and the Spectre. And they are great characters. I also love that first wave of heroes that came in the pages of Action and Detective, like Dr. Occult, Bradley. And, you know, we can certainly have more characters.
I mean, I think it's an interesting cultural artifact, this disillusionment with magic. Do you see it? Like, there's... In modern day pop culture superhero verse, it's very hard to come across characters that use magic. And I don't mean it's hard to come across characters throwing fireballs because God knows we have enough of those. But yes. I mean characters who understand what magic is and how to play with that and what that relationship with reality is. I think because we live in such a science-forward world where we like to define the parameters of everything, that maybe part of the reason that sort of original 80s Brit invasion was so successful with comics is because you were getting writers from a culture and a cultural background where magic had always been part of the way of life. You know, Aleister Crowley and the Raven King and all of that. So... yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated by that side of things. Obviously, my understanding of magic comes with an Indian bent to it. And you know, I use a lot of it in Justice League Dark. But, you know, I would write in that space at the drop of a hat.
That's awesome, man. Nerdette really wants to get more Radio Apocalypse.
I mean, it's a difficult thing. Thank you. It's the only profession where people can come up and tell you you made them cry, and you're like, yeah, thanks. No, it's a difficult proposition because when we were making Radio Apocalypse, part of the reason that book stopped coming out, essentially, is because the creative team on that book fell repeatedly ill during the pandemic. Like, I've had COVID thrice now, but I had it twice while I was working on that book. I know Anand had it, who's the artist on the book, had it twice when he was working on it. I know Aditya, who was working on it, had COVID once and had like other general health issues. And so it just became really difficult to keep the production reins on that book because every time I was ready to shoot out another script, Anand was like, I can't work on this for a while because I'm not well. Or Aditya was like, I couldn't do this. Or when Anand was ready to draw, I was like, I'm under the sheets, man. I can't write anything right now. And so that book fell away for that reason. But also, it's now unfair of me to go to Anand and say, that other long-term project you took up, you should stop doing that and come back and work on this. because I can do that. You know, I can go back and write more Radio Apocalypse, but as an artist, you can't expect that of Anand to drop his stuff that he's got lined up to come do this book again. And I would never do Radio Apocalypse if Anand and Aditya were not working on it, if the original creator and team was not working on it. So the planets have to align. That might take a while.
What? And forgive me. All right, here's another book I haven't read of yours. Shame on me. Well, tell me about Radio Apocalypse.
Oh, so Radio Apocalypse is a story of the last functioning radio station on the planet, set in a post-apocalyptic world where the world has ended due to some mysterious illness. You know, it's the classic radio. It's the classic post-apocalyptic trope. But instead of focusing on zombies or mushroom-headed people, we're focusing on these four people who are running a radio station in the middle of nowhere. And it becomes this kind of beacon of hope and concern and love. Because look at what we did. And I was, it's not a question of copying or prescience for that matter. But this book was being made before the pandemic. And then the lockdown hit. And look at what people did. The first thing people did was walk down onto their balconies and started singing to each other. And so music is very important as a human connection. And Radio Apocalypse kind of investigates that idea. Yeah.
So do you have a playlist?
Yes. Yeah. So part of the shtick of that book was that you were meant to read it while you were listening to tracks that are referenced in the book. So there are specific times you're supposed to put on the music and you're supposed to read, because that's how I write. And I thought, like, the idea for it came from, like, oh, what if people read it the way I write it, which is with music on?
Fantastic.
And it just kind of ballooned from there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea, man. Jesus. All right. So what publisher was Radio Apocalypse?
This was with Vault.
Oh, wonderful. Man, yeah. Way to go, Vault. Wait, honestly, SourcePoint, Mad Cave, Aftershock, I hope they, you know, figure out what's going on with them.
Sure.
And continue to put out good books.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
But that's the great thing is really beyond DC Marvel Image, so many great things. And really, God, so many of my friends are writing for Vault. That's great.
Yeah.
Way to go, man. Maurice and Seeley.
Yeah.
Vault and everything.
I mean, They've put out some really, really interesting books, and they've had some really, really interesting creators to work over there. So
totally, man. Jesus. Oh, thank you, Victor. Greetings from Chile. Great work on tech. Very cool.
Thank
you. Greg Gorman says, Rom, loving your detective run. Are you planning on leaning more into the detective noir take on Batman?
To an extent. I'm also planning on leaning into the Sergio Leone spaghetti Western take on Batman. And also planning on leaning into David Lynch does weird dreamscape take on Batman. So I think everything we've had so far has largely been this kind of gothic neo-noir detective arc. But there will be more of that to come, but also other weird stuff. I'm very excited about. So
now you've explained why you had to leave Carnage and Venom. But he was wondering if there's a chance, maybe when your schedule allows, that you would come back to those, or did you say what you wanted to say in both of those runs?
I mean, no. To be honest, I feel bad about it, but I had to sort of hand off those runs kind of midway. But I feel like my life is going to be very difficult over the next 2 years, just in terms of this, the amount of work that I'm doing. And so I really had to make choices in terms of, and I'll also be super honest, like I would never let go of doing creator owned work. That is part of the lifeblood of me. It's in my veins. It's how I started in comics. And so if you come to me at any point in the year and say, Ram, are you working on a creator owned title? I will be like, yes, I'm working on a creator owned title. And so that will never end. And so it was really a question of like, okay, what can I let go of in terms of work where I'm doing work for hire, I'm doing work on other properties. And these are big properties and I love writing them. But in the end, like my stories have to come from within me in some way. And so it becomes a question of prioritizing what I can do. If anything, and I always say this to other people, like I'm a child. I'm a professional, but I'm also a child when it comes to taking on work. So I say yes to everything that is offered because I'm excited about it. And then I realized that, oh, wait, there's only 7 days in a week. There's only 24 hours in a day. How am I supposed to do this? So like, no, people don't realize this. Last year, I wrote 50 comics, which is pretty much a comic every week. That's apart from doing the work on the video game. That's apart from doing the work on the animated stuff. And, you know, my father passed away last year as well. So I was dealing with like a personal crisis at times. And, you know, over the New Year's, I had a break finally, and my brain just went like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this to yourself? It shouldn't, like, I love my work, but I shouldn't feel completely exhausted and tired and destroyed at the end of it. And so it's been a question of prioritizing my sort of well-being, long-term well-being and health as well. So
have you seen an uptick on your creator-owned stuff since you've done your DC and Marvel work?
Well, yes, of course. You know, more people know of me because of the work I'm doing on the DC and Marvel stuff.
Sure. Are they then going to reading, you know,
to an extent, I think it's different for different people. Like when Layla Starr came out.
Yeah.
I know a lot of creators really kind of look at their own sales and push their books and do the PR stuff. And they're great at that. I am not very good at that. I post out on Twitter and all of that, but I am not very good at sort of engineering a machinery that you know, takes my work out to people. And so I look at sales numbers and you know, the sales numbers on Layla Starr issues were pretty good. And I was like, hey, that's the best any of my creator-owned work has done so far. But then the trade came out, and the trade has just gone bananas.
That's great.
I think we had like 5 print runs on the English edition. There are French, Italian, Spanish, German, I think, Polish editions of the book all lined up. And my French publisher very kindly messaged me to say, you know, that book had done really well for them, you know, like Day Tripper kind of sales. And Day Tripper is like one of the inspirations for that book. And Fabio Moon was a lovely, lovely gentleman. He gave us foreword for the book as well. And so just seeing the response to the trade and the collected edition hardcovers has been intense and immense. And so absolutely on that end of things, I have certainly seen it. And the same is with Blue and Green. Yes. You know, I never imagined I would be in a position where people were translating my books to read them in other languages. So just to have that happen is quite intense.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned Blue and Green, because that is another great book of yours that I really enjoyed. Yeah, man. No, you're killing it, Ram. And I'm so glad that beyond comics that these other platforms are aware of you and giving you these opportunities with your stories.
Yeah, no, and it's something I always wanted to do. My ambition very early on when I was 12, 13 had just – thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Philosopher King just bought the deluxe edition.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. It's a very, very pretty edition. But I was saying that my ambition had always been just to be a writer. And I only got really interested in comics around the age of 2021. And it was through discovering Sandman and reading most of what Neil Gaiman had done. And Neil's work is something to look up to in that sense. You know, he's done comics, plays, radio, poetry, animated work, film, TV, novels. And so that's the kind of writer that I've always wanted to be. And so I started off late because I wasn't a writer until I was 28, 29, maybe professionally. No, I'm making up for lost time, I suppose.
David Cerrone, thank you. This is a League of Word Balloon supporter. Really appreciate it. Glad you're able to watch live. And points out, too, that, yeah, Neil Gaiman started journalism.
That's definitely a
big factor. So that's nice. And Zach says, I push your work, Ram, on my friends and any one of my friends as I can and online. That's great to hear, Zach.
Thank you, Zach. Yeah, and really, that, you know, like I said, there are creators who are good at the whole PR machinery stuff, and my PR machinery tends to be people talking about my books. So thank you so much for that. Yeah.
Again, it's this is where I'm these are the benefits of social media and the internet. And and certainly I've benefited from it as well. Yeah. So that's great. Oh, nobody wants to know if you have advice for aspiring creators.
Well, I mean, this is gonna tie into what I was just talking about. Is you'll find a lot of advice, functional advice on how to be a good professional, like, you know, deliver your scripts on time, or talk to retailers, or, you know, publicize your work. But all of that is extraneous advice to the most important thing, which is just like focus on your work and do things that make you happy, that make you joyful about creating these stories, and maintain that sort of creative innocence and creative love that you have for the work, because, you know, 5 years from now, you'll have conquered all the other stuff. If your work is good, you'll have, the sales will be good. The professionalism will be there. The editors will love you because you focus on the work. And so also, if you're like me and you hate talking about your work in that sense, just doing good work becomes a really great business card. You know, you go like, oh yeah, I'm a writer. I don't want to say much more than that, but here's a book that I made, and people can read that, and they will make of it what they will. And so my advice to aspiring creators is just focus on doing something original, doing something that feels for you like it came from the heart.
Dave wants to know, when you're working on an outlining a new idea, how do you judge when a new story is not ready versus ready to go to script?
I have a trick. I'll narrate it to some poor person who manages to come within my orbit, usually my wife, but sometimes my friends. I'll narrate a story start to finish. And usually, because I don't write down big outlines, I don't detail plots, no. It's all in my head. And if I can't narrate it from my head in an exciting way, then it's not ready. And usually when you narrate, you'll come across places where you haven't thought about what you're going to do, and your mind will just stop. Your narration will stop because your brain will go, I don't know what happens next. And part of the beauty of narrating stories, and it's such a lost art form, right? We used to narrate stories to each other all the time. And part of the beauty of narrating stories is you force your brain to make shit up on the spot because you don't want to lose the flow of your narration. And so when I narrate a story, I will do it like 8 times. I'll narrate it to 8 different people, and they will be 8 different versions of the story. But somewhere there, my brain will go, oh yeah, that third version of the story where I narrated it to Dan, this scene was so amazing in that one, I'm going to take it. And so eventually, by the time you've finished narrating, you will narrate all of it, and you will have the best version of all of the scenes in your head. So that's the secret. That's how I do it.
That sounds great. Did you how did you learn how to write, you know, in a good way? I mean, did you have formal training? what did you use to prepare yourself to start to write?
So I did a creative writing course in the UK for a couple of years. I wrote a novel as part of it. But I will predicate that with the first question I asked my sort of the person in charge of the course was, why us? Why these 12 people that you have chosen for this class? I'm sure there were, you know, hundreds who applied.
Oh.
Yeah. Why these 12 people?
Yeah.
And his response is really, really interesting response. He said, because of the people who applied, the 12 of you already have the stuff that cannot be taught.
Wow.
Which is a great response to give, because I think part of storytelling is innate. It's personality. It's like, I used to lie through every possible way when I was a kid. I used to make stuff up. It would never be like fibs to get out of doing work or stuff like that. Or it wouldn't even be boring stuff. It wouldn't be like, oh, my dog ate my homework. No. If I didn't have homework that day, it was because I was in the park and I met this person who needed directions to go to this house to visit their daughter-in-law. And when we were doing that, my bag got stolen by some guy. It would always be my need for storytelling was more important than my need to get away from doing homework.
Interesting.
And I think that is true in a lot of ways of a lot of different storytellers. And that part cannot be taught. That part you develop. It's like a muscle you develop when you're a kid. But
yeah.
But it's an important part. But 80% of the work can be taught, which is sit down every day and write. You can write terribly and poorly, but you can edit it to make it good. And choose your words carefully. Writing is not plotting. Writing is writing. Plotting is plotting. All of those things can be taught. And I think the course was tremendously useful in doing that.
Dan, I'd really be interested in what kind of questionnaire that the guy who was running the class or woman that, you know, they used for the criteria of picking you 12. That's very interesting.
I mean, there wasn't really a questionnaire. We had to submit a written sample. Pretty much like a 10,000 word short story had to be submitted. And based on the strength of that, they would. You can read bad writing, but you can still tell when someone's a good storyteller with bad writing, which is what I was when I joined the course. Yeah,
that's funny. A lifelong friend has on his own decided to start to write novels.
Yeah.
And I see his strengths, but I want him to get with somebody that can hone his craft and be a better storyteller. Because he does. He has great ideas. But really, I give him credit for just writing these books on his own and having the tenacity to do it. But it's like, you need somebody to look this over and you know, shape it or help you out in terms of trimming the fat and getting to
what I think there are like three stages of muscle development in terms of storytelling. I think your first stage is having an idea. And I think to be very honest and not to put down people at all, but to be very honest, everyone has ideas. Everyone has ideas. Like, I go to the gym, I had an instructor, I told him, hey, I write comics. And the first thing he did was, oh man, I have an idea for a superhero, right? And so everyone has ideas. But the difference between a professional and someone who just has ideas is that a professional knows how to turn an idea into a story. A story is not the same as an idea. A story is people doing things, people wanting things, people not getting them, people struggling, people making bad choices, and people making good times or good consequences out of bad choices. Those are stories. And usually you'll have an idea, and then the hard work is in creating a story that works to present your idea to people. And then the third stage, and probably the most tedious but also most important stage of being a professional, is then everything that decides the success of your story comes in its execution. Just because you have an idea and a story doesn't make it good. What makes an idea and a story good is how you execute it. And it doesn't have to be space aliens invading so-and-so, yada, yada. It can just be two guys who met on a train and realized they like the same brand of ice cream. You can tell a story about that, and you can make it very interesting if you execute it well, and if you know how to write it well, and if you know how to tell that story well.
Your words are well put, and also great Batman short story called Neutral Ground that Mike Resnick wrote. You ever read that short story?
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So it's this tailor that operates on the down low and makes all the costumes and equipment for both the heroes and the villains. And that's what it is. That's the whole story is you got Bruce coming in, you got a few other supervillains coming in, and it's just the conversations they have with this tailor. And it's this fantastic story, but because of the execution, the motivations behind it and everything,
you can also take like Iron Man 3, right? It's a controversial film. Lots of people love it. Lots of people dislike it for many reasons. But that story is not a superhero story. It's a story of a guy who realizes that there is joy in just fixing stuff. That's it. It's a guy who used to be a mechanic who became incredibly successful. Forget Iron Man 3, right? Let's say we're doing a movie about, I don't know, Ford or something. He used to be a mechanic. He used to build stuff in his garage. He became like the leader of the most successful company, blah, blah, blah. And then the board wants to throw him out. People don't care. You know, his stock price is low. And the thing he does to return to himself is to go home, take this car that he's been meaning to restore for years, and he starts working on it. That's the story. That's Iron Man 3. And so you realize that you can tell two different stories using the same core concept, core idea.
I love it. Ahmed says, just pre-ordered Detective Volume 1 hardcover. If it's anything similar to Catwoman or Swamp Thing, I'll love it. You will love it. Don't worry, Ahmed.
Thank you. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. All right, last question from Nobin. He wants to know what your favorite comic book movies have been.
My favorite comic book movies. I think I love the Captain America movies on the Marvel side. I love the first Black Panther movie was great. And on the DC side, I like what's his name? Jack Nicholson and Matt Keaton Batman.
Oh, sure. The 89 Batman.
The Tim Burton original Batman.
Yep.
And I also like the Chris Nolan trilogy. Don't hate me.
I love the Nolan trilogy. Absolutely, man.
Yeah, I thought the Nolan trilogy finally got the balance between doing something grounded and doing something grand right for a contemporary audience. I think until Nolan came across, Batman was struggling with an identity crisis of whether he wanted to be dark and brooding and real or camp and wonderful and Adam Westy. I think those films were really important.
I agree. Arrowboro wants to know if you've ever been to Trinidad. His grandfather raised his mother's side of the family there.
I have never been to Trinidad. In fact, I've never been to large parts of the Caribbean. I've always meant to go. I've never been to lots of places in the world that I've always meant to go. And so every time someone always asks me, like, I keep referencing Japanese culture as well. And people always ask me, like, oh, have you been to Tokyo? I'm like, no. And I hate myself a little bit. So one day.
Oh, I'm sure those opportunities will come. Absolutely. L. Campbell wants to know, what character or story do you wish you could go back and change, if any?
I don't wish I could go back and change any story. I wish I could take stories that exist now and move things forward. I don't like the idea of going back to change things. I think you should face direction of travel.
I like it. I'm telling everyone that I have to wrap, and I appreciate it. I think you handled the questions great. You're handling your stories great, Ron. Way to go. This is a fantastic story you're telling a detective. I promise I'll go back and read Carnage. And really, Radio Apocalypse sounds intriguing. You know my background in radio, so it's you wrote a story about even an apocalyptic one. That's all right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, only 2 issues out, but I think they're good 2 issues. So
that's cool. That's excellent. Everybody, thanks a lot for watching. Rom, thank you. Come back once the Vigil is up and running. I'm going to go back to Lazarus Planet and read the preview and everything. And certainly we'll be looking for the Vigil coming up in the detective run as well. But that's great, man. Way to go. And
thank
so, yeah.
Thank you, John. And thanks for having me again. Yeah.
Oh, dude, I was going
to
say.
Always a blast to come talk to you.
I feel the same way, man. And I promise you, no, I'll be bugging you during the summer for a new talk about Vigil and whatever else is going on. So way to go, dude.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Thank you.
Well, thanks, everybody, for watching. It's going to be a fun week here on Word Balloon Live. Make sure you join us for the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay happy, stay healthy.